Session number 8263, Reel 1.
Captain Ives Ratliff, Reel 1. Now, you joined the army in 1936?
Yeah, that's right, the October. Joined the 6th Field Brigade, as the regiments were then known, at Lucknow, which was my hometown.
Could you tell me why you joined the army?
Well, I couldn't do anything else other than join the army, because it came from a long line of army people. My great-grandfather was in the Buffs, and he came from Devon and Cornwall area and went out to Australia when there was trouble with the convicts and so on. And after those troubles had been ironed out, he then went with the regiment over to India, where my grandfather, Captain William John Ratliff, was born. He went into the East India Company, and eventually, having come of age, he joined the 2nd Battalion, the Bengal Artillery. He fought with some distinction, and I have all the cuttings and so on if the copies are required. During the Indian Mutiny, during the siege and later the relief of Lucknow, at the end of the mutiny, everything was more or less back to normal, he decided to stay and live in India, which he did. And he and my grandmother, this is on the maternal side, carried on living in Lucknow, and eventually they both passed away, and they're both buried in the residency of Lucknow. Now, if I chose to, on my demise, being a descendant, direct descendant, that is, of a mutiny veteran, I think I have the privilege of being buried in the residency grounds as well.
Was your father also a soldier?
My father, the soldier, wasn't a soldier in the true sense of the word. He was an army surgeon. I don't know a great deal about him, apart from the fact that he was an army surgeon. And when I was, I think, about the age of 5, there was a domestic upheaval, and my mother divorced him. I went on from boarding school to boarding school, and eventually finished up in the La Martiniere College at Lucknow, which was a sort of pseudo-military establishment, in as much as that we had the school uniform, and everything was done on a parade basis, like meals, falling in for chapel, falling in for studies, classes, and so on and so forth. And in the Lucknow contingent, as it was, at the Auxiliary Forces India, which is the equivalent of the Territorial Army over here, there were various branches, like Light Motor Patrol, Artillery, Infantry, and so on. Well, our college produced one company of infantry, that was the elder boys, and up to the age of, that was from 18 over, and up to the age of 16, there was the cadet company, which had all the full military regalia, such as, you know, army boots, putties, cork helmets, and tunics, buttons, and so on, you see. And we used to do the normal parades twice a week, whilst the private soldiers who were 18 and over would get a pay of sorts. We only got what they call sort of marching allowance. I think we got 2 hours a mile for every mile that we had marched. And we did our annual camp with the rest of the Lucknow contingent, route marches, training, rifle ranges, and all the rest of it. And this merely enlarged my concept of the army, and drove me harder and harder to get into it. And eventually, of course, Lucknow was a very, very big garrison. There were several British and Indian battalion, British cavalry, with one battery and RHQ of the 6th Field Brigade in Lucknow. The other one was in a split between Cawnpore and Faizabad. Anyway, at the age of 16, I approached my mother and I said, well, look, I want to join the army. And the only thing I can go on is a trumpeter. But I was realizing my shortcomings. I didn't have a musical note in my system. Anyway, she said no, that I was too young, that I was to carry on with my education and to wait for a further year. Well, however, on my 17th birthday, I said to her again, look, Mother, I'm 17 now and I want to go in. So reluctantly, she agreed. And I went along to the, I think, the Cameronians, and I can't remember the other battalions that were there, and to the 6th Field Brigade. Well, wherever I went, I was told that I was too old to be a trumpeter and too young to be a man, and would I come back in a year's time? Which reluctantly I did, and I carried on. Not much enthusiasm for my schoolwork because I was hell-bent on the army. And eventually, when I was, well, I was 18 on the 12th of October, which was a Saturday, and of course there was nothing doing in regiments on Saturdays. All the officers were out either pig-sticking or riding or whatever. So on the 14th of October, I went in and had an interview with then Captain Friedberger, who was the adjutant of the regiment, and he swore me in and then apologised for not giving me the king's shilling because it didn't appear in India, and suggested that as I'd just come straight from college, that I'd, before coming to join the unit, I might like to have a couple of weeks holiday. Of course, I was so keen to get into the army. I said, no, thank you, sir. I want to come straight in. So I was eventually ushered off to 69 Field Battery. And from then on, I had all the usual recruit training because I was the only one, although I could march and salute and present arms and all this sort of thing, and there's nothing I knew about horses. So I had all this business of riding schools and stables, and we spent hours and hours and hours. And that was, as I say, the October. In December, we moved from Lucknow to Mull. And it was very, very nice in Mull, and we just carried on with the usual training, there's gun drill and so on. Then eventually I was put on the young signalers course, which was a duration of 6 months. And that entailed learning the Morse code and playing with dummy Morse keys and what have you, flag and lamp, buzzer, and Of course, there were intensive riding lessons in the riding school, because one as a signaller would be an outrider, and so it went on.
And can I ask you why you finally settled on the artillery rather than the infantry or the cavalry?
Well, I plumbed for that because I had so much information and build up about my grandfather from my mother, who, according to her, was a paragon of, a soldier, an artilleryman, and, you know, the Bengal artillery with all its, the great show that they put up during the Indian Mutiny. And I became sort of intoxicated with this thing. I don't know, I suppose you might call it a form of brainwashing. But it was implanted in my mind, and therefore, you know, the artillery was the choice in the end.
But from what you said, it appears she wasn't very keen on you going into the army.
Not as a 16-year-old. She wanted me to be a little bit mature, particularly to go in, as it were, fully educated. Because had I gone in at 16, you see, I wouldn't have. The last 2 years was really the crucial part, as it is with any young man.
You mentioned the various methods of signalling which you were trained. Did you get training in the heliograph?
Yes. I forgot about that. But it wasn't used to any great extent, because particularly in Mao. Although it was hilly, it wasn't, the hills weren't particularly high. Whereas if one was in, say, northern India, one could go up onto the foothills of the Himalayas, and you had a great range of distance in which to, to see. Well, known people who have done this thing, and they've done it up to 100 miles, but then they could only do it for a very short period because of the delicacy of the operation of getting it on the bead.
While all this was going on, between when you joined the army and the outbreak of war, were you aware of political developments in Europe?
Yes. But only in a general manner, because the papers in India that we had, say the Times of India and so on, they had pictures and short articles about Hitler's rise to power, and there'd be photographs of some sort or the other, and the general upheaval of his political operation and so on, but it wasn't any sort of to any extent in great detail where one could say, oh, he's going to master the world from this. This was only general information about him within Germany. I mean, there's nothing about say the concentration camps that he set up for his political opponents and things like that. I mean, that all came later. There was a bit of publicity given to his book Mein Kampf, but unfortunately one couldn't obtain a copy of it in India. But I suppose the reporters in Europe who sent all this information back, they talked about Mein Kampf and his plan for world domination or European domination or whatever. But I didn't really at that time think that there was going to be anything other than Hitler setting up and his Third Reich and making it a utopia for Germans.
So did the outbreak of war come as a surprise to you?
No, not entirely. It was still, sort of 50% in my mind. You see, what one must bear in mind that the overseas information was fairly limited, particularly in the army, and God bless them, I mean, the ordinary soldier, I mean, he thinks of his parade, his loyalty to his country and that kind of thing, but the education level leaves a little bit to be desired, and therefore, other than their own interest, they're not interested in either. There were one or two, of course, who had that interest in something outside their normal sphere, and found very difficult at times, you know, to try and talk to people about this thing. I mean, if there was something that came up, you know, about Hitler and his rise to power and so on, oh, he's a bloody crackpot, you know, he won't last 5 minutes, he'll finish up in a gutter with a knife in his back, and that's where the thing finished, you see. You know, they didn't want to know any further because they didn't already know any, didn't have any sort of hints about anything outside to give them any interest to build on. You know what I mean?
So your life is really bounded more or less by the regiment?
Yeah, yes, exactly.
What about Italy and Mussolini? Did you hear anything about...
Well, I knew about Mussolini because Captain Friedberger, who was the adjutant of the 6th Field Brigade, he went to the Rome Olympics with, I think it was Major Shepherd or Colonel Shepherd, and they won the, you know, the some show jumping event. And there's a photograph in the artillery magazine with Mussolini presenting them with their medals or whatever. And, of course, at the same time as one was getting a little bit of information about Hitler and his activities in Europe, there was also information of a similar nature coming through about Mussolini and his fascists and his black shirts and his sort of debunking Vittorio Emanuele from the monarchy and he being, you know, the kingpin and the king just being left in the background as a figurehead and, you know, that sort of thing. But again, it was like Hitler's, or the opinion of Hitler in his Germany. You had this business of Mussolini in his Italy, and there was, of course, the in 1936 there was the invasion of Abyssinia, which everyone took a dim view of. But then, as soon as the League of Nations sort of okayed it, and everyone sat back and said, "Well, that's the end of that era," and no more was thought about it.
When the war did break out, did you have any ideas about what sort of strategy or tactics the enemy might use?
None whatsoever, because we knew, for example, that Hitler had been building up a vast army and air force and tank force and so on in Germany, but as to his, pardon me, his Blitzkrieg and panzer divisions rolling over Europe, I mean, well, no one conceived that because everything was done, you know, according to the book, you know, the use of tanks in warfare, and no, I just didn't know. I thought it if there's not going to be anything, it would be in parallel with the way that we were being trained.
I think when war did break out in Europe, you were with the 3rd Field Regiment.
Yeah.
As a signaller. Was there any immediate change in the training or status of the
regiment? Oh, yes. The training intensified to a very, very marked degree, inasmuch as that we, instead of sort of doing a weekly deployment of guns on a sort of outdoor exercise out in the Maidans of India, we found we were doing this duration of sometimes 2-3 days every week, more or less, and the emphasis was on the digging of slit trenches and gun pits and you know, funk holes and so on, where the battery headquarters or the troop headquarters would be, you know, below ground level. And so I think we dug up half of Secunderabad in our effort.
What sort of guns did the 3rd Field Regiment have?
Well, the 3rd Field had a battery of 4 or 5 howitzers and a battery of 18 pounders without the split trail, the block trail.
Single trail.
Single trail. Things. I was at that time with the 4 or 5 howitzers, and it was a very, very good gun, but unlike the 18 pounder, there wasn't a great range. I mean, with both of them, I think to get to 6,000 yards, one had to dig the trail in, you know, about a foot or 18 inches or something, you know, to get
elevate
the maximum
the barrel.
Range. Yeah.
And did anything happen on mobilisation besides the intensification of training? Did you have to draw any extra stores or call
well,
up any extra
this
manpower?
That I wouldn't have known really anything about that, because that would have come, you know, on the quartermaster's side. With I mean, normally I think the regiment or a battery functions on the G1098 stores, but they have another catalogue or whatever for wartime equipment and extra spares for guns and things, you know, vehicles and what have you. I think there were a number of additional vehicles sort of brought in. I'm talking now, I was with the 28th Field at Mau when, you know, when they were mobilising. And there was an immense amount of activity almost from Ravalli to Lights Out in one way and another, because all these the stores were coming into the railway siding at the Mau station, and they had to be ferried up and distributed to the two batteries. And I suppose the infantry battalions there were doing much the same thing.
But from what you're saying, it didn't really specifically affect you.
No, only in as much as that one had to lug the stuff from onto vehicles at point A and take it off at point B, which was the quartermaster stores, and then from there the numbers ones of guns went and drew whatever additional stuff that they had. I might add at this time that the equipment, the artillery pieces that we had, and this is the 3rd 57 with the 4-5 Howitzers and 1st 5th with the 18 pounders, were the conventional things, 14-18 war vintage, with the big solid wheels. I mean, that's what the last we saw of them at Mau before proceeding to Bombay to embark.
Do you know why you were transferred to the 28th?
Well, I suppose the 28th were probably under strength to you know, war strength, that is to go overseas, because it was obvious that they were going with all the activity and so on that was going on. And there was shortage of gun numbers in particular to make the thing up to full scale. And apart from, I think there were three or four of us from the Third Field that went to 28th. There was also people from the 11th Field at Meerut. Then there was quite a lot from there. Probably about a dozen or so that came to 1st 5th Battery anyway. I don't know how many of them went to 3rd 57.
Did it take you any time to settle in?
Into the 28th Field? No, none whatsoever, because I found that it was a very composite, efficient and a happy regiment, whereas what I had left was the Third Field was that in 1938, when 6th Field Brigade had already changed over to becoming 6th Field Regiment, was disbanded, and we went from with battery to battery almost to the Third Field, so that it, within each battery, in fact the whole regiment, you had two batteries in one battery. And it's not a happy situation, because one is accustomed to one's own officers, one's way of doing things, and they've got their way of doing things and so on. And it took a long time to, even on the soldiery level, to sort of merge into one family. And but there was always this antagonism, because I wasn't in the 6th Field all that long, but I had a sense of loyalty to the 6th Field. It's a good, in fact, a very, very good regiment. And people were very hurt when it was disbanded. Mm. And going on disbandment with this hurt in one's heart to another unit where one was regarded as a bloody foreigner, as it were, it didn't lend itself really, you know, to the best solution. But anyway, in the end, it fairly well ironed itself out. By the time I left, there was a spirit of camaraderie and acceptance and understanding on both sides.
But you didn't get that same sense of alienation at 28th
Field? Oh, no, 28th Field was absolutely wonderful in the way that I was accepted. Was as though I had been with them all the time. Yes, I would say, you know, that they were a very happy and composite regiment.
I think you said that they had two batteries, as Third Field had.
Yes.
And did they have the same sort of guns?
Yes, exactly the same. There's 18-pounders in one, which and 4 or 5 hours